Hey, Talkhouse listeners, it's Josh Modell. Instead of encouraging you to listen to podcasts today, I'm here to encourage you to read something great. The particular something I have in mind is the second issue of the Talkhouse Reader, the print zine spearheaded by our fantastic music editor, Annie Fell. This issue is focused on the intersection of food and music, and it features contributions from Maddie Matheson, Coleman Domingo, Squirrelflower, Sam Evian, The Blessed Madonna, and more. There are pieces about eating while on tour, the gentrification of food, cooking as a creative catalyst, and much, much more. You can order a copy today, along with the first issue, at store.talkhouse.com. Please do check it out.
We here at Talkhouse recognize that in 2020, even more than usual, life has sometimes felt like a bit too damn much. So we partnered with the very rad nonprofit Sound Mind to bring our listeners a free mental health toolkit. Over at talkhouse.com/soundmind, you'll find valuable resources that cover everything from coping with coronavirus anxiety and grief, to depression and bipolar support, to suicide prevention help. There's links to support groups and to sliding scale therapy. You can check out community-specific resources for BIPOC, Latinx, and LGBT-identifying folks, as well as frontline workers, parents, and musicians. These are tough, tough times, and we're all feeling it. We want to make sure our listeners and readers are able to get the help they may need, starting at talkhouse.com/soundmind.
Hi, this is Carrie Brownstein.
This is DJ Premier.
This is Darren Aronofsky.
You got the RZA right here.
Rose McGowan.
Right here. Hey.
Aisha Tyler.
A Tribe Called Quest.
Fred Armisen.
Prince Paul.
Javier Munoz. Seth Meyers.
Frankie Cosmos.
Flying Lotus.
Hi, we're Haim, and you're listening to the Talkhouse Podcast. Ow!
Is up. It's your host, Elliot Einhorn. Welcome back to the Talk House Podcast. On today's show, we have a talk where a young gun picks a veteran's brain. A youngish veteran, he being Mac DeMarco, and quite a young gun, 21-year-old Spotify wunderkind Sloan Struble, aka Dayglo. To help me intro this week's show, joining from a city known for its wind,
it's Josh Modell. What's up, Elliot?
Executive editor on the line, baby. How's it going?
I just want to tell you, it's not very windy here today. It's quite calm.
It's not a wind reference, Josh. It's a political reference.
Oh, right. Okay.
Josh, I'm so psyched to have Mac DeMarco back on the show. This dude is always insightful and always hilarious.
He is an excellent guest, and in this case, kind of an excellent host.
Yeah. He kicks things off as an interviewer right at the beginning.
I think if this music thing fails him, he's got a career as a presenter of some kind.
We'll give him a show here at the Talkhouse.
There you go. So for people who don't know, which I imagine is a very small percentage of our audience, Mac DeMarco is kind of a lo-fi, dream pop, rock and roll success story of the past decade or so. He's released a ton of albums. He's been on tour pretty much constantly until the pandemic stopped everyone from being on tour. His latest release is actually a Record Store Day exclusive LP of demo versions called Other Here Comes the Cowboy Demos.
That's right, because there had already been Here Comes the Cowboy Demos, and these are some others. But of course, all of these are songs that were on his 2019 record, Here Comes the Cowboy. So Mac is sharing the process.
Yeah, and it's kind of a testament to how much people love him that they want to hear all this stuff. They want to hear where the songs came from. They want to hear how they ended up. He's got a really, really dedicated following.
He does. And it is a joy because the demos are quite different. It's not like some artists where it's, you know, just a fully formed version. We get to hear the bones coming together here. Should we check one out?
Yeah, let's hear it.
Let's play the demo version of Heart to Heart.
Sentimentally assumed, walking parallels, heart to heart.
That song is Heart to Heart. This conversation you're about to hear, kind of a heart to heart.
It is, man.
Tell us about Sloan Struble.
Sloan is a fascinating character. As we mentioned, he's quite young. He's only 21 years old, but he's racked up hundreds of millions of streams on Spotify with his very catchy post-synth pop tracks. Sloan wrote, performed, recorded, produced, and mixed pretty much every part of his record, Fuzzy Brain, which was self-released in the fall of 2018. Now, that was just issued on vinyl and cassette and reissued digitally with some bonus tracks in 2019. Dayglo have a number of pretty huge songs, but I'm going to play the hugest, Can I Call You Tonight?
So can I call you tonight?
I hear a little New Order there, Josh. Maybe a little MGMT.
Yeah, maybe a little bit of the XX.
I'm here for it.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
I'm also here for this conversation. Sloan and Mac chop it up on quite a bit. They get into Mac's origin story and a really nice overview of his career.
Yeah, and of course, you can't have a conversation nowadays without talking about the effects of coronavirus on people's music careers, including, for Sloan, an aborted first ever tour.
Oh, what a heartbreak. They also get into the changing concepts of DIY and the definition of the term indie. It was cool to hear their perspectives on that.
Yeah, I love listening to Mac talk about selling out. He's funny.
Should we roll the tape, Josh?
Yeah, man, let's hear it.
Well, nice to meet you, Sloan.
Yeah, it's nice to meet you as well.
Yeah, I'm curious. I'm curious to get to know you today because I don't know too much about you, but I do know a few things about
you. This Daniel connection.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Daniel McNeil, ex-Texan. He was here last night, actually. And I've met Nori, that plays in your band as well, I think.
Yeah, right?
Another Texas boy, short for Norris, right?
It is short for Norris, which is his middle name, first name Matthew. He's got a lot going on.
I didn't know that. I know Dan pretty well now, but I don't know Nori really. But
yeah.
But he's been over to the crib once. But give me a little splash. Give me a crash course on what you do.
Well, I'm a young man. I'm 20 years old. I've been working with music as long as I can remember. Put out an album on the internet. The internet did its thing, and now I'm here.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you live in Austin?
I do, yeah. I'm from a small town called Aledo.
Is that in Texas?
Yeah,
too?
Yeah. Just kind of like west of Fort Worth, football town. And I moved to Austin initially for college, but am still here now and not an attendant of the University of Texas.
Mm. And the music that you release is called Dayglow. A funny fact about the name Dayglow, I actually know a bunch of Japanese kids with the same band name, but I think theirs doesn't have vowels.
Yes, D-Y-G-L. So
yeah, those kids, yeah.
Yeah, I found that out after deciding to call my music, but it's good stuff, it is.
Nice kids, what can I say?
Yeah.
Yeah, what is it? Take me more down the road of your tunes. How would you describe your music? Give me the juice.
The juice. Production is probably my first love and my only love with music. Like I love performing and, you know, making content and stuff. But I initially just started out with being obsessed with like gear and finding out how songs were recorded and made. So just started out with GarageBand, and then it kind of went down like a rabbit hole of synth stuff. I've just always loved making the music. And so Dayglow is kind of the product of like collecting a bunch of demos that I had that made sense together and then released that. But, you know, I've got my trap beats here. I've got my,
respect,
you know, Connor Oberst inspired stuff over here. And Dayglow is kind of just that middle ground.
If you had to put a genre on what you've released as Dayglow, what would you put? Pop music?
I would say, like indie pop. You know, the indie label.
Nice. I'm curious, actually, because I think when I'm 30, so I'm a little bit older than you.
Yeah.
I guess. But I feel like nowadays, I don't think the indie means the same thing as it did maybe when I was a teenager.
Yeah.
Or even before that. I'm curious. You know, you're a youth still.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with you on that. It kind of does make me cringe when I'm like, it's indie music, because that can just be interpreted in so many different ways.
I mean, not cringe. I mean, it's interesting enough already where like, you know, inherently the term means independent for a while. Probably it's meant, you know, there's a sound attached to the, you know, the label or whatever. But I mean, even now it's like... I don't know. It's interesting. It's like, you know, an indie record. You record all your own stuff at your crib, right?
Yeah.
Because I do too. And that's a big part of that thing for me, where it's kind of like, oh, it's like homemade. I don't know. I guess I'm trying to say like nowadays a record could come out with that indie sound, but there's like songwriters, producers, engineers, all the ingredients that go into like somebody trying to be on the top 40, but for some reason they're still like, nah, nah.
Yeah.
It's indie.
Right. You know? Just like, has remnants of like MGMT and then it's indie, you know?
Yeah. Confusing to me. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But is it really worth putting all this thought into? I don't know.
Right. Like, yeah. It's easy to overthink it for sure. But yeah, I mean, you're definitely an artist that I've looked up to for a while, considering like how self-involved you were and like self-dependent. And I think that is the charming thing about indie music, or it should be, that it is independent and like literally homemade, like in a home. I think the textures of that kind of get taken advantage of sometimes, but...
Tell me, that's what I'm interested in too, because I love to home record. I'm an interesting case because I've been to studios. I've worked all over the place now, but for the most part with my music, I'm in my garage right now. Mm-hmm. And everything happens in here. And I still even have this little chip on my shoulder where I'm kind of like, I don't really like people playing on it. I don't really like other people engineering it.
Yeah.
Because I like feel, it feels weird to me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I love it. And I think, you know, I get like a special different outcome, I think, when you're like doing it in your PJs at your house. But
right,
I don't know. How do you feel about it? You like want to do it, right? Like you're not just trying to.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You like doing it at home.
Initially, well, I really didn't have a choice being from Aledo and being like a young kid. Like I kind of had to learn how to do all of it. But I've also realized as time's gone on, it's really just my nature and personality to want to be doing it by myself. But yeah, I was actually having a good talk with Nori, our mutual friend, about this. And I was kind of just reflecting on the concept of how like on Spotify, it's like an artist page, you know, like the word nowadays is artist.
Yeah.
And when you think of the word artist, that's really just like a singular person. And then what they create is their art, like a reflection of it. But nowadays, you know, not to like bash on Drake or something, but like Drake is an artist, you know, but he has so many other people involved creating his art. And so I think it's just a tricky thing nowadays where like, you know, music is kind of art, but it's also entertainment. And it's also like form of like streamed media. So I don't know. It's just this whole blur.
I think it depends on the scale too. And with social media, I think that a lot of the time, there'll be a wildly popular artist nowadays, but like maybe their Instagram posts are more important than their music, which is, you know, I'm not coming down on it. It doesn't really matter to me. I'm not on any of that stuff, so I don't really care. But it's like, it's interesting. What I was saying about the indie thing too is that it's like, it's all kind of melded together, you know, where it's not like over here, there's the indie pot. Here's the top 40 thing. These worlds don't collide because they do collide now.
It's
true. You know, it's like the internet's kind of just taken all the walls out. I think especially for like younger kids that are engaging with music or listening to stuff online, it's like, you know, I've had people that like don't see the difference between me and like a big, you know, someone that like charts in the top 10 or something. It's like, and I'm kind of like, wow,
yeah,
that's crazy. You know, it's like, because I don't know. It's just like, I guess it's just right up next to one another. You find it through the same channels or something. I don't know. It's weird. It's confusing to me.
Yeah, it is confusing.
It's not a problem.
Yeah, it's like an odd thing to like be frustrated about, but I don't know. I think it does matter, like because people are so deeply involved, especially with musicians. Like you were talking about with social media, how like being a musician is more than just like playing music, which is kind of nuts. But people are just so deeply involved with like what you do other than making music. And
I mean, they can be. I haven't been on it in 2 years of social media. And before it was just pictures of me like doing double chin photos or whatever. But I think... there are a lot of instances where it is like, you know, this like choose your own adventure, like, you know, the fans are right there. And I love talking to kids that like my music, like in real life or at shows or whatever. But the social media, not for me. So I don't know. But it is weird. It's a weird landscape to make music in. I mean, I'm talking not even with, we haven't even got to the coronavirus or anything yet, but just in general. What a crazy world we live in. Crazy.
True.
World.
Very true. It's strange. Yeah. A lot of points to talk about. But
yeah. Okay. Back to the points that matter. Where were you at with like everything going on with, you know, whatever's going on in your world or life or whatever when the virus hit? And how are you feeling about it now?
Oh, man. Yeah, it sucked when it started. I was on the very first day of a drive from Austin to Chicago, starting pretty much my first headline tour. The whole thing was sold out. And on the drive up, I had to like cancel everything. Yeah, it was terrible. And then the drive back from Chicago, as you would assume, was low spirits. Yeah, it was really odd because I'd initially just like forced myself to quarantine practically before the tour because I thought this was going to be such a busy year. So I'd already been kind of lonely and like excited to go on tour and then, you know, spent many more months doing the exact same thing.
I'm sorry.
At first, it was like extremely isolating because nobody really knew how serious it was. And I feel like the first thing that went was like touring.
Oh, yeah. It'll be the last thing to come back as
correct,
well.
Correct. Right. But yeah, it just felt like, was I overreacting? And like, I was so stoked for this tour to happen because everything's been like doing really well for me, but it just doesn't translate when it's all on a screen, you know? Like, I have these fans, but like, I haven't met any. And so I was just stoked for things to kind of feel like they weren't just living in my head and like getting to play some shows. And yeah, it's weird that I have to wait even longer and like things are still growing. So next time I tour, which feels like it'll never happen, I'll probably be in just much bigger rooms. So I never really got to take like steps towards it. So it's just kind of a weird buffer zone.
That is a trippy thing.
Yeah.
To like splash into the big spots.
Yeah.
Immediately.
Yeah.
Have you toured really before or are you just kind of, was kind of the jump?
Yeah, well, I mean, Dayglo is the first thing I've ever even had the opportunity to do or be a part of just because I'm so young. But we toured supporting Coin.
Oh, cool.
And did like, I think, 8 shows with them and then did some headline shows after that. We were gone for like a month and a half and then went to the UK with Hobo Johnson, which was cool. I think did like 10 shows.
I met that kid in a parking lot once.
Oh, wow. What? Tell me this story.
I was going to Vintage King Pro Audio in Los Angeles.
I was on their website this morning.
I was buying a BNC cable to clock some things together. And he was buying some monitors.
Nice.
And we said hello.
Yeah, nice guy.
Yeah. So parking lot style. Anyway, sorry, continue.
Yeah. So long story short, touring is something I've been waiting to do and I keep waiting and it's just going to hit me in the face next year if it happens, which will be a nice, you know, comforting slap, but it'll be a slap for sure.
I was in a funny situation when everything, because I've been on tour pretty much nonstop for the last like, maybe like 10, 11 years or something. Like since I was I've been touring since I was like 18. A lot. I mean, doing shows before that, but really like going on tour. And we just kind of never stopped. Like we just never stopped and I've been doing it for forever. And I love it. I think it's great. And I think, you know, but it was getting to a point this year where a lot of people were kind of like, hey, Mac, you okay, bud? Been drinking a lot out there, not looking too healthy. Like maybe you need to take a little, you know. And I was like, oh, I'm fine, relax. And then boom, quarantine. So it's like, I have this break now. We had to cancel a bunch of stuff, but I think, the first thing we were supposed to do before it got everything started getting canceled was that we were supposed to go play in China. So at that point in time, that wasn't going to go down. But the first couple of months, I was like, wow, this is crazy. I haven't been home for more than like 2 months in like a decade, you know? And so it took getting used to. And then now I'm definitely at the point again now where I just straight up miss it a lot, you know? And I don't really know what to do. You know, it's like 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock rolls around and I get this like, it's like this weird, like I'm supposed to be on stage right now. You know, it's weird.
This show is brought to you by Patreon, who ask creators, are you tired of being paid in clicks and likes? Social media and streaming platforms help people find your work. but getting you paid is another story. With Patreon, you can stop rolling the dice of ad revenue and per stream payouts and grow your creative career through the direct support of the people who care the most, your fans. Since Patreon is built for creators, not advertisers, you'll skip the middleman and develop a sustainable income source by offering a recurring membership to your fans. In turn, they'll get access to exclusive community, premium content, and the chance to become active participants in the work they love. The creative system is broken. So if you're a podcaster, video maker, musician, writer, illustrator, a creative person of any kind, sign up on patreon.com now. That's patreon.com. And change the way your creativity is valued by building the steady income stream you deserve.
I've been having a lot of thoughts about, like, you know, because it is our industry, as people would call it, just definitely the first to just disappear, like large crowds of people, not happening. And then it'll be the last thing to come back to. And then sometimes, you know, I go through little ebbs and flows of kind of being like, what I do is so stupid. It's so stupid, you know? But then I'm like, no, it's important. It's important.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think it's just made me take it a lot less seriously or something. And maybe enjoy it as well. Like, you know, really not take it for granted. I don't know. It's funny too, though, even making music because, you know, I've had all the time in the world to like, I could be in here recording and writing songs all day and doing this and that. But I think like the concept of, you know, I come in here, I pick up a guitar and I'm kind of in the back of my mind somewhere, there's like, well, I don't know when you'll be able to play this in front of people. And like that kind of puts like a stopper on the whole process, right. You know? So I don't know. It's just like, there's like a mental block or something. During the quarantine, I've needed things. I've needed tasks or like hobbies with like a finite endpoint, you know? Like,
right.
Like mixing a song. I mean, it's not even that finite, but you can finish, you know, but like anything creative is kind of tough. Me and Dan McNeil, who, you know, we've been working on cars because that, you know, you put a new spark plug in, boom, right. You're done. You finish.
Yeah. Daniel finish. Too. He's crazy. I've heard so many stories through Nori, just like fixing gear. And like, he just seems to know how to do that kind of stuff. It's crazy.
He knows everything. He's great. Well, I'll give him a little plug here. Mr. Daniel McNeil. I think he's the same age as me. I think he's 30. Incredibly handsome audio engineer, all around well-versed handyman in Los Angeles. If you're looking for any audio work out here, look the guy up, people. Let's go. But yeah, he knows how to do everything. It's crazy.
He seriously
I've
does.
Spent a lot of time with this guy. He's a gem. He's just a treat.
It's cool.
Yeah, man. I actually pierced his ear the other night.
Oh, wow.
I had never done that before. Yeah.
Man.
So now I know how to pierce. I know how to give the tattoos, but I don't have any piercing, no tattoos. So anyway, Dan McNeil. but I don't know. Tell me more about your quarantine. I get curious how people have reacted with all this.
Yeah. For me, like I was telling you about with the whole tour situation, I kind of came back just bummed. And I was so ready to be like doing music because I'm, you know, right at the beginning of everything. So it's just mostly been mixing and finishing the second record.
Yeah.
Kind of in a different light than I thought it would be in with everything going on. I'm kind of looking at these songs differently and kind of approaching it differently than I would have if there wasn't a global pandemic going on. But like you were saying, it ebbs and flows. You know, everybody's got days where they feel like they can kind of get the hang of this, and then it feels like this is just terrible. So the past few days I've been productive. Days before that I was not. I don't know how long it's going to go on, but yeah, just working on music however much I can.
Keeping busy. Kind of makes you look at your whole life, doesn't it, and go, wow, isn't this funny?
Yeah.
Wow. Look at this. Oh, the way that we've been doing things for the last couple of years. Huh. Oh, look at this. Oh.
Yeah, there's kind of just like also this pressure to like, if you're an artist, I've heard so many, like there's been so many interviews where I'm like, oh, I can't wait to see what all these artists come up with all this time. it's kind of like this pressure that it's like our responsibility to make stuff. And I've kind of, because of that, don't want to do anything.
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly what I'm talking about. It's like there, a lot of my friends that I've been talking to are like, I mean, I think the vibe is pretty heavy on a lot of people. And it's kind of like, you know, I have a lot of friends that are in the same boat as me where it's like, I don't want to make shit, you know, with this thing that's going, it's weird, you know. What I'm worried about is that as soon as we come out of this, if, you know, whatever happens, you know, I don't know how it's going to blow over or whatever, mm-hmm. if it does, or who knows, but I have this feeling that we're just going to have all of these albums that are like, oh, baby, in the lockdown.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I'm good.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I'm real good on that one. You know, it's like, so, I don't know. It's interesting too. You know, it's like people are confused and they jump, you know, like a lot of like, you know, remember the first 2-3 months there was like live stream galore, like everyone's doing these live streams and mm-hmm. it was kind of like, maybe it's lost its cuteness now, or maybe I just don't see it anymore, but it's like, I don't
know.
These like huge artists that, you know, have like a multi-million dollar studio in their house recording their song on like their laptop mic. It's like, just plug a 58 in. Like,
right.
Like just anything, just one, you know?
Yeah.
Like, your records go platinum. Mm. Just give me the fidelity.
Yeah.
Just a little bit, you know? Like, come on. I don't know. Mm. It's been funny. It's interesting, too. I have a lot of friends that are, because I'm not a very social guy these days. I mean, I can be, and I, you know, I like to play shows, and I like to see people sometimes and stuff. But I also don't really have a problem being in my house all the time and just, you know, doing something, you know, whatever, tinkering away. It's something. But a lot of my friends, you know, especially in Los Angeles, like a lot of people I know are just socialites and they need to be out all the time. And and I feel like, especially in the last couple of weeks, like people like that have really felt the pain in a interesting way. You know, mm-hmm. it's like I have friends that have gone off traveling, or people that, you know, it's like they're trying to find, I don't know, somewhere that this stuff isn't going on in, you know, and it's, and maybe they'll find a sliver of it or a little thing or, you know, go to Europe or try something, you know. But it's like, this thing's going on all over the world. Like, I really think mm-hmm. that resistance is futile. I think you just kind of got to take it in and just find peace. You know, you just got to find peace.
Have you found, like, this rest from touring? Like, obviously, it's not a nice thing that there's a global pandemic, but has it kind of been a good thing for you to have that, this like forced block of time where you like can't tour?
In a way, yeah. The only thing I worry about is my finances. But even that is like, we're okay. You know, it's not, as long as I don't go on any like really stupid shopping sprees or something, then I think we'll be okay. But yeah, it's really, you know, it makes me think about what I do, why I do it. Mm-hmm. Will I keep doing it? You know, it's like there are a couple months of this thing, like I haven't really been doing music that much. And it's like the first time in my like, you know, grown up life or whatever that I haven't really done it. And I think about that fact and I'm kind of like, how does it make me feel? You know, I do love it. I think I've had enough time away from it that I'm kind of like, I want to keep, you know, at least just making little things or something. If for anybody maybe, or maybe just for myself or just to whatever. But it's weird. I feel, you know, I feel a lot healthier than I did. I haven't had a drink the whole quarantine either, which is funny because I tell people that and they're like, wow, man, right on. But it's like, in reality, it's like, I'm not the kind of guy that has like a beer with dinner. Like, if I'm going to get drunk, I'm going to get like drunker than everybody else as quickly as possible. Like, that's my kind of, you know, that's the kind of alcoholic that I am. But, you know, there's nobody around, so it's been fine, you know, but it's, and I like that, and that, even that makes me think about, you know, where we're at. And I don't know. It's really interesting. You know, even when shows do come back, it's like, I guess I was in a funny position where, you know, we had already pretty much finished the album cycle for my last album. Mm-hmm. We'd toured it for like a year or whatever. So I don't know. I guess I could make something new. I don't really know if I'm going to go back to doing the thing way we were doing it before. Am I even interested in going back? I don't know. It's kind of exciting in a way, but also sad and also strange and also confusing.
Yeah.
But hey, just taking it day by day.
That's all you can do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm curious, because you've been touring. You probably started around my age, right? If I'm 20.
Yeah, or maybe like seriously touring probably at 19. I did a couple tours when I was 18, but we like
Man.
Probably the first time we did like the horseshoe of the States was when I was 19 or something. It is crazy now, you know, because I get to meet kids like you, or I have a lot of other friends and bands that are younger than me that, you know, start, they either have a support tour or, you know, play these venues that, you know, like having a sold out show right off the bat, I think it's amazing. But it's also like, when we started touring, it was like, we were playing to like four people in North Ontario, you know,
yeah.
There's no one, or like three dudes high on acid in like their girlfriend's basement in Detroit or something. Just like, there was no one there. But I mean, and then every once in a while you'd get a show that was kind of cool, but yeah, I think, I've been doing it for a long time.
Yeah. I was just curious, like how you started, I guess, like what initially made you fall in love with music and has kept you going.
When I was even younger than that, I think it was when I got into high school, I met a bunch of kids that were a little older than I, and they were in bands and they were playing shows. And I had already been playing music a little bit before I got into high school and playing guitar. But, you know, it was kind of the moment where I realized like, oh, I don't have to keep practicing. I mean, you know, no diss on anybody that is like a virtuosic shredder, but there was a while where I was like, I don't want to play in front of anybody until I can like play as good as Joe Satriani, or, you know, like that kind of guitar lesson vibe. But I met these kids and I was like, oh, these kids, I can't even, you know, they don't even know how to play as well as I can, but their bands are like amazing. And they're playing these like broken guitars and it sounds crazy. And, you know, and then I started going to local shows a lot and meeting like a lot of like local artists and stuff that were older. And the scene at the time, I grew up in a relatively like, it wasn't a small town, but it's like, you know, not a very famous city in Canada, Edmonton, Alberta. I mean, it's famous for some reasons, but for some reason at that point in time, the scene was pretty good and there were a lot of bands around and a lot of stuff going on. So I got to experience it. And I think, I don't know, I just caught like a bug from it or something. And I was like, okay, I like this. Moved to Vancouver eventually, to the west of Canada. And got in the scene there and met a bunch of people. And then eventually was in Montreal after that. And by the time we were in Montreal, we were touring all the time. Vancouver's kind of where it started, but
yeah,
I don't know. I had these ideas in my mind where it was like, whoa, like I can, you know, it all starts with like, I can record myself. Like, wow.
Yeah.
So you do that. And then it's like, I could like burn CDs and like go buy these CD slips. It's weird, like CD warehouse place in like the suburbs. Like, wow, you know? And then you actually want me to be on the bill of your show? Like, wow. And then it's like, man, like we can go on tour? Like, wow, you know? And it all just kind of unfolds as, but the channels, I mean, the way we did it, it was like back in those days, it was like, you know, you hear about bands that were playing at these venues like The Smell or Market Hotel or, you know, Friendship Cove or something, or just places that you heard the name of in different cities across the continent. And you just send emails. You send emails to bands that played there. You send emails to promoters or just to like the MySpace of like the venue or something. And
yeah.
Try and get a slot. And sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. Like we had, it's funny, you know, I can't imagine me trying to book my own tour now. That would be a nightmare. But so back in the day, it was just like, you know, we'd have this like loose, weird, like 2 month tour of like, yeah, I think we can play here on Wednesday. They said it was cool like 2 months ago. And then you roll into town and they're like, who are you guys? Or like, oh yeah, no, like the venue's closed now. It's like, you know, a lot of turmoil, but it was great. You know, I had a really, really nice time. Even the first, you know, by the time we were like Mac DeMarco band or whatever. And the first couple times we toured that, I remember the first tour we did, it was all over the States. And we went, you know, we played a lot of places the bands usually don't. We did like 5-6 cities in Florida, like went across the top of the States right under the Canadian border. And a lot of the shows in small towns like weren't that bumping, you know. But then LA and New York and Chicago and whatever, you know, Austin, those were good shows. But yeah, it was just like, just cruising. We're cruising, we're doing it up.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know. In those instances, you don't really think about money or luckily my whole band were like kind of, you know, just slobs like me that were kind of like, well, we don't have anything else going on. So we might as well get in the car and like go on the, you know, it almost feels like more of a road trip with instruments than a tour or something, you know, but then at some point it kind of switched over and then all the shows got, they weren't huge all of a sudden, but it was like everything was sold out all of a sudden. Probably when my first like full-length record came out or something, number two or something. But it was weird when it swapped over. The power of the internet.
Yeah, because that's kind of something I wanted to touch on because for me, like, everything has happened extremely fast. And I'm still kind of in that stage, like, I don't feel like I know what I'm doing at all.
Here's the trick is you kind of never do.
Yeah. Never do. Yeah. But, like, there's just, like, this weird lingering feeling that, like, when this is all over, there's going to be, like, bigger crowds. And I'm also making music that's, like, happier, and there's just kind of this strange pressure of just like being a laid back person, and it's an instance with a lot of pressure, and so I just wonder like how you dealt with that at the beginning, like, because you seem like a generally pretty down to earth, like laid back person, and then keeping up that persona with more pressure being added, what that's like, if you even think about it. I mean,
yeah, I never really paid it too much mind. It was like, I mean, when shit started getting, you know, people started coming to the shows and stuff, I was nervous. Mm-hmm. But usually what I did to combat that was just get drunker than usual, you know, but mm-hmm. which is not, I don't recommend that. I would not recommend that to anyone.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It was honestly like things were moving so fast that we were touring and we were playing and we were doing this thing. And then like, I'd be home for a month and I'd be like, shit, I got to make an album. Then I'd like, you know, made Salad Days or whatever. And it's like, cool. And then, you know, send it to mastering, get back on the plane, go back to Europe. Honestly, a lot of that time frame is kind of blurry to me because it was just like, boom, 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 boom. But yeah. I think for me, because I came from smaller scenes and like, I looked up to a lot of bands that had really like carved out how to tour in the States and do, you know, DIY touring and kind of, you know, doing things their own way. It's like, even when presented with a bunch of, you know, opportunities or when people were coming up to me at the bar being like, hey kid, want to talk to you about being your manager. You know, it was like, it took me a long time to get a booking agent before. I mean, I love my booking agent now, but, and my, you know, my manager or whatever, but I came from the school that was like, no, I don't want you. You're like, I don't need you, you know? Mm-hmm. So it took me a long time to get one. It took me a long time to agree to have someone manage me, like lawyers. I was like, what the hell? What are you talking about? You know, even now, it's like, you know, for the size venues we play, a lot of people would look at, you know, we're rolling up to like Red Rocks or something in like a Sprinter van. You know, it's like, there's just weird mental blocks that I have where it's like tour bus. No way. Like that's for weirdos. Like screw that. You know,
yeah.
I mean, we have taken a couple now and it is kind of dope, but you know, it's just like, there's things like that where it's, you know, just keeping the crew really small, keeping it, you know, in like people that I've known for a long time or I don't know, but on like a personality level, I just try and do me. I don't really ever think about how people interpret how I am or how we are on stage or anything
right.
like that. We just kind of do it, you know, and I've never really thought about it. I just, if it doesn't, I think the other thing with me too is that it's like, if something doesn't really feel natural or comfortable, then I'm not going to do it. Like, I'm not going to think about it. I'm just not going to do it.
Right.
You know, but I don't know. That being said, I've been, you know, to tons of photo shoots where they dressed me up in all kinds of garbage and I was too nice to tell them to go fuck themselves. So, I don't know. It's a bit of a maze.
Yeah, I just think that's awesome that you have been so like true to yourself. I don't know. I feel like there's just this general narrative that like once you become a bigger musician, like you're gonna sell out like eventually. So it's kind of this lingering like demon on my shoulder.
It's funny. A lot of kids don't even know what selling out means anymore.
Yeah, true.
The internet's tricked everyone into. Your Instagram page is like your personal brand or whatever. And it's like being an influencer is cool or something now,
yeah.
or like, you know, getting brand sponsorships is like a good idea. It's like, you look like an idiot, kid. You know,
yeah.
it's like, it's not a good vibe. You know, some kids will tell you selling out is when you sell out a venue. It's like, you don't quite get it.
Yeah.
You know, so it's interesting. That kind of ties into, you know, the way that indie and like major artists, there's no divide really anymore.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of confusing to everyone. I mean, on the other hand too, it's like a lot of huge artists, you know, say like, I don't know, who do I like that's gigantic? Kendrick Lamar or something, you know, like he's one of the world's biggest artists, you know? I think he's amazing. And I think he's true to himself and doing the music that he, you know, it's awesome. What he outputs is awesome. So it's kind of like, there could be exceptions, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But then there's total Tony Bolognese out there as well. But I don't know. It's a crazy world.
It is. It definitely is. I think just the like stage that I'm in is the part that you like were describing in your timeline as like a blur. I feel like everyone should have this time be a blur, and all I can do is like reflect about it. And so I just like got to go do something, you know? It's just weird like having to linger here.
That's the thing. I'm lucky that I'm an old toad already with the coronavirus. I feel bad for kids your age though. It's like a lot of my friends were on tour or about to go on tour, had their tour canceled or whatever else, and it's like I almost feel like an asshole being like, I needed the break. Like, my body's falling apart.
No, I mean, but you did. Like, it's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, but I feel bad because it's like, you guys, it's popping off for you. You should be out there rocking and rolling and having a good time,
Yeah.
All I can say to that, though, is that when shows do come back, people are going to be so amped to go to shows. Like, so incredibly jacked.
I'm kind of nervous. It's going to be some crazy energy. Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be nuts. It's going to be awesome, though. The craziest thing is, like, the rescheduling game. It's like I talk to my manager every once in a while.
Yeah,
they're looking to push back to, this date. And I'm like, uh-huh. And, like, the uh-huh is kind of like, well, cool. We can push it then, but, like, is it really going to happen then, or is it just going to get pushed more? And it's like, it's like I haven't had anything rescheduled yet where I'm like, okay, like, that'll work. Even in Europe, because I know they're trying to start doing stuff in Europe, and we have stuff for next year, and I'm kind of like, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Sure. Sure. That'll happen. Uh-huh. Maybe. Maybe it will. Maybe it won't. I have no idea. But, it's crazy.
Yeah, we'll have to see. Hopefully sooner than later, but highly doubted.
Yeah. You working on stuff right now?
Yeah, just kind of finishing up this next record. I mean, obviously, just every timeline that could possibly exist is starting to cross over with each other, and I don't really know when it'll be out, but I'm working on it. Yeah, it's definitely, it's a lot less of an attempt really to like fit in with like the indie thing we were talking about, and more just like what I'm actually listening to. So it really is like pretty Michael McDonald on a D50 like inspired kind of stuff. So I'm stoked and hopefully it's received well, but then again,
what is your main instrument? Are you a piano player? Is that your vibe?
I've been told it's guitar, but it's like I don't really know how to play anything well. It's kind of like you were talking about how like you didn't like feel like you could go and play something until like you met those people. And I honestly felt that way, but my music already existed, and then like people found that music, and so like I'm kind of in this weird position where I still don't feel like I'm that great at playing anything, but like people are listening, so. I don't know. I would say production is probably like what I am best at, but who knows?
A pinch of this, a pinch of that.
Yeah.
It's kind of the same. I mean, I don't really know how to play anything well, but I can do a little bit on everything. So
yeah,
it's kind of, it's the move.
Yeah, it's this way to do it.
Yeah. Works for me. Well, Sloan, it has been my absolute pleasure chatting with you this Tuesday.
Tuesday.
Keep your chin up with all the coronavirus baloney, and good luck with the new tune. Sorry that the tours got canceled, but they will be rescheduled. And God bless. And
it has been a pleasure, Mac. Really, thank you again. It's been awesome learning from you.
My pleasure. No problem. God bless. Ciao.
Mac DeMarco, Sloan Strubel, thank you so much for joining us here on the Talk House podcast. Listeners, if you enjoyed today's episode, definitely check out Mac in Conversation with Liam and Neil Finn in our archives.
Yeah, that's a great one too. Check out Talk House on all your favorite social channels, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. We got them all at Talk House.
And make sure to subscribe to the show because we have some fucking amazing shows coming up. Tame Impala's Kevin Parker in conversation with Caribou. We have MXM Tune and Carly Rae Jepsen, as well as Deftones' Chino Moreno and comedian Reggie Watts. You do not want to miss these.
Everybody you heard on the show today was kind enough to record themselves. And our researcher was Reese Higgins.
Hashtag Stay Home Studios. Our producer extraordinaire, the man behind the curtain, Mark Yoshizumi.
As always, the Talkhouse theme song was composed and performed by The Range.
Till next week, I'm Elia Einhorn.
And I'm Josh Modell. peace and love.